الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله وسلم على نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وبعد. We continue with the tafsir of Surah An-Nisa and Ayah number 94 in particular. أعوذ بالله السميع العليم من الشيطان الرجيم. يا أيها الذين آمنوا إذا ضربتم في سبيل الله فتبينوا ولا تقولوا لمن ألقى إليكم السلام لست مؤمنا تبتغون عرض الحياة الدنيا فعند الله مغانم كثيرة كذلك كنتم من قبل فمن الله عليكم فتبينوا إن الله كان بما تعملون خبيرا. O you who have believed, when you go forth, O you who have believed, when you go forth to fight in the cause of Allah, investigate. And do not say to one who gives you a greeting of peace, you are not a believer. Aspiring for the goods of worldly life. For with Allah are many acquisitions. You yourselves were like that before. Then Allah conferred His favor upon you. So investigate. Indeed, Allah is ever with what you do acquainted. Shaykh Abdul Rahman bin Nasir al-Sa'di alayhi rahmatullah says, يأمر تعالى عباده المؤمنين إذا خرجوا جهادا في سبيله وابتغاء مرضاته أن يتبينوا ويتثبتوا في جميع أمورهم المشتبهة. Allah the exalted commands His believing slaves, whenever they go out engaging in jihad in His cause, seeking therein His pleasure, that they should investigate, verify, investigate and be firm. يعني strive to be upon clarity, seek certainty. في جميع أمورهم المشتبهة, and all of the affairs which are doubtful, and all of the doubtful affairs. This is like the hadith. الحلال بين والحرام بين وبينهما أمور مشتبهات لا يعلمهن كثير من الناس إلى آخر الحديث. أمور مشتبهة, things which are doubtful. You don't know really that there's no clear ruling. It's not black and white. It's gray. فإن الأمور قسمان. The Sheikh said, verily affairs are of two kinds. واضحة وغير واضحة وغير واضحة عفوا a clear and unclear. فالواضحة البينة لا تحتاج إلى تثبت وتبين. Matters which are clear do not require investigation and trying to be upon certainty, because it's clear. لأن ذلك تحصيل حاصل, because it is like it's like acquiring something which already is yours. You know, it's like doing something which is already done. You don't need to do it anymore. It's already been done. That's what it's an Arabic expression to say, tahsil hasil. It's like someone will go and intercede with the boss to hire this particular person, and he accepts that intercession and he hires that person, and then the next day someone and he goes and does the same thing. We say you're just doing something which is already done. There's no point in doing it. Or, you know, it's something along these lines. وَأَمَّا الْأُمُورُ الْمُشْكِلَةِ غَيْرُ الْوَاضِحَةِ فَإِنَّ الْإِنسَانَ يَحْتَاجُ إِلَى التَّثَبُّتِ فِيهَا وَتَبَيُّنَ. As for the matters which are, you know, problematic and unclear, then a human being, the person should investigate and be upon clarity. لِيَعْرِفَ هَلْ يُقْدِمُ عَلَيْهَا أَمْ لَا. So he may know, shall I embark on this or upon this journey, or shall I engage in this act or should I not? فَإِنَّ التَّثَبُّتْ فِي هَذِهِ الْأُمُورِ يَحْصُلُ فِيهِ مِنَ الْفَوَائِدِ الْكَثِيرَةِ وَالْكَفِّ لِشُرُورٍ عَظِيمَةٍ. وَعَيْكُمْ السَّلَامِ. Investigating in these matters, as in the doubtful matters, will bring about tremendous benefits and will block or halt a lot of evil. a lot of evil, عظيم, شرور عظيم, a major, great evil. ما للأمور, عفواً, ما به يعرف دين العبد وعقله ورزانته. Now, in this is how you can evaluate one's religious commitment, his intellect, and his firmness by seeing how he acts in these particular cases. بخلاف المستعجل للأمور في بداوتها قبل أن يتبين له حكمها. This is unlike the one who's hasty and who hastens in matters as soon as they begin without verifying or investigating the ruling. Should I do it or should I not? Is this halal or is this haram? And this happened to many people who fell into this pyramid idea in business. And as soon as they heard about it, they got involved in this and that, they started making money. But they didn't check to find out what is halal and haram. And hey, guess what? It's haram. And so, this person is hasty. We say this person lacks strong religious commitment. He lacks real intellect. And he's not firm in his matters because he did not verify, because it's doubtful. If it was clear halal, can I buy this, bag of chips for 1 riyal? You don't need to investigate. But if something requires investigation and you don't investigate, it's an indication about something else. فإن ذلك يؤدي إلى ما لا ينبغي. Not investigating will bring about that which should not be, shouldn't be there. كما جرى لها, or that which is not befitting. كما جرى لهؤلاء الذين عاتبهم الله في الآية لما لم يتثبتوا وقتلوا من سلم عليهم وكان معه غنيمة له أو مال غيره. Now, أو مال غيره, عفوا. This is what happened to those whom Allah reprimanded. Whom Allah reprimanded in this ayah, who did not verify, and they killed someone who had given them salam. They had killed someone who gave him the salam because he had with him some spoils of war, some war booty, or someone else's wealth, or whatever reason. Anyways, there was a reason behind killing him because there was something with him that they wanted, and obviously he gave him the salam, and the ijtihad of the sahabi was, this person had just killed so many of the sahaba and the Muslims, and now that he sees the shining sword, he suddenly wants to become a Muslim. So it's like hypocrisy. So it was a matter of ijtihad. Nevertheless, Allah Azza wa Jalla reprimanded that particular behavior, and he required investigation even in these issues, because at the end of the day, if he gave you salam with his speech, verbal salam, as in he gave the shahada, then you have to treat him accordingly. Now, afterwards, we say, let's see, are you living up to that shahada? Are you praying? Do you believe? Or have you left shirk and whatever? But initially, anyone who gives you the shahada, you must accept their Islam according to what is apparent. Then afterwards, if he was a hypocrite, it will become evident. And then he is treated as an apostate and so on and so forth. But from the very beginning, you don't have the right to assume otherwise, because you really don't know. I mean, still, you may think he's being a hypocrite and it may be real. And so, you fall into that doubtful gray area. ظَنَّا أَنَّهُ يَسْتَكْفِي ذَلِكَ بِذَلِكَ قَتْلَهُمْ وَكَانَ هَذَا خَطَأٌ فِي نَفْسِ الْأَمْرِ. And he thought that it would be sufficient just to kill that person, and that was also an error in the very matter. فَلِهَذَا عَتَبَهُمْ بِقَوْلِهِ. This is what Allah reprimanded them by saying, وَلَا تَقُولُ لِمَنْ أَلْقَى عَلَيْكُمُ السَّلَامَ لَسْتَ مُؤْمِنًا. And do not say to the one who gives you salam, you are not a believer. تَبْتَغُونَ عَرَضَ الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا, seeking, some of the pleasures of the worldly life. فَعِنْدَ اللَّهِ مَغَانِمُ كَثِيرًا. With Allah are great spoils of war. أي فلا يحملنكم العرض الفاني القليل على ارتكاب ما لا ينبغي. Do not let that which is perishable, that which is soon to expire, cause you to commit that which is not becoming. فيفوتكم ما عند الله من الثواب الجزيل الباقي. So you miss out what awaits you with Allah from that great everlasting reward. فما عند الله خير وَأَبْقَى. That which is with Allah is خَيْرٌ, is better. وَأَبْقَى is more lasting. These are some translations which you people involved in da'wah have to memorize. Because sometimes you'll be in a situation where someone says, translate what the Shaykh said. And the Shaykh may recite Surah Al-A'la. Can you translate Surah Al-A'la? Are you able extemporaneously, as in without prior preparation, without going to a reference, without opening a translation of the Quran, are you able to translate a surah right there on the spot? Or at least, if not a whole surah, some ayat. Is it acceptable that someone involved in da'wah does not know how to translate? وَالْآخِرَةُ خَيْرٌ وَأَبْقَى. Should know that the term akhirah means, khayr means, and abqa means, from baqa, baqiya, he remained, that which remains, that which does not go away. So they are basic vocabulary that everyone involved in da'wah must know. And in case you haven't been acquiring that, then there must be a beginning point. It's very easy. Alhamdulillah, it's very easy. It's not rocket science. You just have to read often, listen often, and take notes. Unless you have this superb memory, which allows you to memorize things, you know, on the spot, and you don't have to review them like our Salaf used to be, because they would read one page and they would memorize it. One of the Imams would have to cover the other page while reading this one, just in case his eyes fell on the other page by mistake and wind up memorizing it before the one before. And we read something, you know, 15, 20 times and you know what's happening to us. So we're not that good. We're nowhere near to being that good. But we can, however, memorize some basic stuff. And if we can't do that either, then we're really bad. And so we're not that good, but we don't want to be really bad. And so please, yani, take these things into consideration. Juzu Amma, in particular, you should be familiar with every single word in Juzu Amma. The Arabic, if you're an English-speaking person, then you need to know the Arabic equivalent. And if you know both languages, you need to know both. If you speak other languages, then you need to know what that means in your language as well. This is in terms of Juzu Amma. Then there are particular ayat in the Book of Allah which no one involved in da'wah can afford not to know. And I'm saying this because of an experience which I had in the last couple of days. I was reading an Arabic newspaper online, and they mentioned this American doctor, whatever he was, 63 years old, who embraced Islam. And he embraced Islam after many years of research and whatever. And the thing which led him to Islam at the end was a dialogue he had on a chat website. And so I was like, interesting. So, and they had actually the site. They had the site there. It's a magazine. It's an internet magazine. Not a magazine, newspaper, daily. So I said, interesting, I wonder who these brothers are, how they're giving da'wah, what they're doing. And so I took the link, went on there, and I wanted to chat with the individuals to see their approach in da'wah. How much do they know? And I'll tell you the truth, it is not very pleasing. It is not very pleasing. Besides the lies, the deliberate lies which the brothers were doing and making, because they couldn't answer a straightforward question. And I particularly tried to corner them with very difficult questions. I began with, is it true that in your religion, a male, a Muslim man, can have sex with a slave girl? Which basically means that A, you have slaves, B, you can have sex with them. And so here, this is a very tough one to begin. But there are answers.
Your question.
That's my question. It's a loaded question. But I want to see what they're going to say. I mean, look, you can, at the end of the day, you're supposed to tell them the truth in the best way Allah gave you. If they fail to understand, hey, Allah will not hold you accountable for their failure in understanding. However, if you lie against the deen of Allah, then Allah will hold you accountable for being a lying da'i. And what kind of da'i is one who lies? How in the world are you going to be a person of da'wah when you lie about your own religion in order to please an anonymous person? Again, I'm totally anonymous to them. And still they lied. Almost in every question I asked them, Aisha's marriage to the Prophet ﷺ at the age of 6 or 7 said no. 9 or 10. Some said 18, blah, blah, blah. Gave me a link to some article written about this issue. Everything I asked them about the names and attributes of Allah. They're not upon Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah. They are pretty much Ash'aris. And so, this is besides the bad English and rudeness. Rude. I'm asking a question and I'm being very kind. Please, can you explain to me what is that interview? And they're already attacking me. And I told them, I said, my friend, you act, you know, you should be defensive when someone attacks you. I'm not attacking you, I'm asking. So you need to take it easy and explain to me. He said, yes, you're right. So they're excited. As soon as they feel that the question is difficult, they start telling me, and oh yeah, when did your grandfather marry your grandmother? Oh yeah, what about your grandfather? What did he marry your grandmother? Do you know what age they were? I said, listen man, that's none of your business. First, he said, are you married? When did you get married? Then when did your father marry your mother? Then when did your grandma? I said, listen, my friend, I'm not going to tell you my history here. Maybe no one in my family married anyone at a young age. I'm asking you, in your religion, did your prophet marry Aisha at the age of 6 or 7? Just tell me yes or no. Don't be going and attacking me to justify the thing. So, I'm saying this, ya ikhwan, to realize that even the people, Zamallah khair, we ask Allah to give him the good reward. But even the people involved in da'wah, most of them don't know what's cooking. They don't know what's happening. Not linguistically, not legislatively, and not in terms of wisdom in the way you deal with a non-Muslim. I mean, it's one thing to give a lecture to the Muslims where you speak about the non-Muslims, and it's another thing to address the non-Muslims in a particular way. And these are not the same. You as a da'i have to know how to distinguish between this crowd and that crowd. So this necessitates an effort on our end. That we have to rise to the occasion. We have to arm ourselves with correct knowledge of the deen, with confidence in what Allah has revealed, irrespective of the people being satisfied with it or unsatisfied. But we have to do the job. Otherwise, the da'wah, you know, will not move on as Allah Azza wa Jal has intended. And since Allah intended that the da'wah will move on, we will be replaced by others. Very simple. Don't think that the da'wah will stop because we failed. Allah Azza wa Jalla will replace us with other people who will do the job in a manner which is pleasing to Him. نعم. على كل حال وفي هذا إشارة إلى أن العبد ينبغي له إذا رأى دواعي نفسه مائلة إلى حالة له فيها هوى وهي مضرة له أن يذكرها ما أعد الله لمن نهى نفسه عن هواها. جميل. He said, in this there's a sign, or there's it alludes to an idea, that whenever a slave, as in one of us, sees in himself, he identifies within himself an inclination towards something in which he desires, in which his desires are activated. You like something. And you're leaning or you're inclining towards it, and you find that within yourself. Then, however it is harmful to you, then remind it of what Allah has prepared for those who prevent themselves from chasing their desires. Remember, and who can quote an ayah where Allah told us the ajr and the reward of the one who prevents himself from what it desires? If you don't know this one, man, I'm going to drink this whole cup of coffee. When I go back to my maktab. Not now. Juz'u amma, jama'at al-khair. Wallahi, clear like the sun. Even the same words that we just used, the same words are used in the ayah. Huh? Mus'ab. Which surah, which ayah speaks about, you know, nafs and hawa? Can you think of an ayah which has nafs and hawa in it? Aywa. Wa amma man khafa maqama rabbih wa naha an-nafsa 'anil hawa fa innal jannata hiya al-ma'wa. Naha, he prevented an-nafs, the soul, 'anil hawa, of that which it desires, of desires. Same words the Shaykh used. نهى نفسه عن هواها. Huh? وقدم مرضات الله على رضا نفسه. And he put forth that which is pleasing to Allah over that which is pleasing to him. And that's really the, that's the crux of the matter. Yani being able at the time when something is desirable to you and you want to do it but it is not pleasing to Allah, you having the ability to say, I'm going to leave it alone so Allah will be pleased with me. That's really the, that's the stuff. That's taqwa. That's ihsan. That is the iman. That's what iman is supposed to do to one of us. Now, doing so continuously, perfectly, immaculately is somewhat impossible. So we have to fall short at times. But that shouldn't be our usual standard condition. That should be an exception to the rule. The standard condition is being able to do so. Abandoning what is pleasing to us in order to do that which is pleasing to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. فإن في ذلك ترغيبا للنفس في امتثال أمر الله وإن شق ذلك عليها. Now in that there's an encouragement for you to fulfill and obey the command of Allah, even if that is difficult upon yourself, even if it's difficult and there's hardship and struggle associated with it. ثم قال تعالى مذكرا لهم بحالهم الأولى قبل هدايتهم إلى الإسلام كذلك كنتم من قبل فمن الله عليكم. This one we all need. This one we all need, beginning with myself. I'll tell you why. Allah then reminded them of their affair before their guidance to Islam, which also means before your guidance to practice, if you had been a Muslim. But if you were born Muslim but you left Islam, if you were born Muslim, then you left Islam, then you went back to Islam, then you're technically a new Muslim. Because what you did before was not Islam. Allah said, such you were before, this is how you were before, then Allah bestowed or conferred His favor upon you. Yani, when you look at someone in the state of disbelief, or the state of disobedience, then remember that you were in that condition and it is Allah who guided you. Why is that important? Because we tend to become aggressive or violent towards or against those who are in the state of disbelief and misguidance. Which is to some extent correct. That hatred is natural. Rather, it is obligatory on you to hate whatever Allah hates. But that should not affect our behavior. Yani we have, and this is not hypocrisy. We must differentiate between what we feel and how we act. And if you tell this to the non-Muslims, that look man, in my heart I hate kufr and kufar. However, that does not mean that I will mistreat him. Don't play with the pen please. That does not mean that I will mistreat him because of my hatred. They will say, you're being a hypocrite. You're being double-faced, isn't it? You say, really? Turn the table around. Say, listen, a parent who has grounded his child, punished his child, and at that moment, he's frowning. Huh? He's upset with his own child for failing an exam, for doing something that is not befitting, whatever. Now, does that parent love his child in within? Absolutely. Do we say that because you love that child, you must always express that love and smile? Or are you allowed at times to display your dissatisfaction and your displeasure and whatever because the situation requires of you to do so? Say, no problem. So then, why don't you consider that hypocrisy? Say, because you know, wisdom entails that you show your child you're angry with them, so they will not carry on with their misbehavior. Say, that's the same thing. So this is not hypocrisy on our end either. Yes, we don't like kufr, but we were commanded to call to Allah with wisdom, good preaching, and argue, if ever, in the best manner. And so that's what Allah told me to do. Now that does not mean that I will love that which Allah hates. But this ayah is important because we tend to go to exaggerate our in our behavior, not our feeling, and our behavior, where we actually wind up hating people in the way we treat them, even though we should remember that we were in their same shoes. And had someone treated us the way we treated them, that wouldn't have brought us back to get guidance. It would have made us even go further away. So really, يعني, reflect on that on your own time. فَكَمَا هَدَاكُمْ بَعْضَ ضَلَالِكُمْ فَكَذَلِكَ يَهْدِي غَيْرَكُمْ. The same way Allah guided you after you have been misguided, He can similarly guide others. وَكَمَا أَنَّ الْهِدَايَةَ حَصَلَتْ لَكُمْ شَيْئًا فَشَيْئًا فَكَذَلِكَ غَيْرُكُمْ. The same way guidance was gradual, it was gradual, step by step. You didn't go from overnight from being the most wicked Muslim or the most wicked kafir to the most righteous Muslim. Your guidance was gradual. Slowly but surely you started to practice more and more, stronger iman, stronger understanding, more implementation, and so on and so forth. Similarly, Allah will guide others gradually. So take it easy on them. Take it easy on them. فنظر الكامل لحاله الأولى الناقصة ومعاملته لمن كان على مثلها بمقتضى ما يعرف من حاله الأولى ودعائه له بالحكمة والموعظة الحسنة من أكبر أسباب الأسباب لنفعه وانتفاعه. So you then, the one who's intellectual, when he looks into his deficient condition before, and then he looks at the treatment he is providing to the one who is in his condition now, or the one who's misguided now, and then he realizes what condition he was on, what he was in before, then he will treat him according to that. He will treat him according to knowing that my condition before is like yours now. He will make dua for him, or his da'wah, his invitation to him. بِالْحِكْمَةِ عَفْوَ نَدْعَى بِالْحِكْمَةِ. Then you invite him with wisdom, with good preaching, is among the greatest reasons to benefit and to benefit that person and to benefit yourself. يعني the person whom you... يعني for example... let's say you used to be a singer or a musician, okay? And then you meet people who are on the verge of returning to Allah, and in that stage of transition, the transitional phase. So now you remember how difficult it was for you to leave alone music. You didn't do it instantly. If you know that, then you have to treat the people or that person accordingly, because you know. Now someone who's never been in that position, someone who's never been a musician, does not know the attachment that the people have to the music, musicians that have to music. So he may not be considerate enough and expect you to leave it instantly. But one who's been there and who himself gradually left music will be able to understand. It doesn't mean you make halal what Allah made haram, because that's what the other extremists do. They say, ma fi mushkila, you know, enjoy it, and ba'den you will leave it alone. Say, no, that's not good either. You tell him, Allah does not like this. May Allah make it easy for you. Inshallah, gradually you'll be able to leave it alone. So you have to also be truthful in what you're saying. Don't play with the deen. And make him tell him it's halal now, and then ba'den when he becomes a better mu'min, we tell him it's haram. He's lying. No, tell him it's haram, but tell him that, you know, with time, when your iman grows, you'll be able to leave it alone. Like that. Not the other way around, because it is not being sincere to this individual. فَأَيْنَ نَحْنُ الْآنَ. نعم. وَلِهَذَا أَعَادَ الْأَمْرِ بِالتَّبِيِّنَ. This is where Allah repeated the command to do tabayyun twice. فَتَبَيَّنُوا. Then verify, investigate. فَإِذَا كَانَ مَنْ خَرَجَ لِلْجِهَادِ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ وَمُجَاهَدَةِ أَعْدَاءِ اللَّهِ وَاسْتَعَدَّ بِأَنْوَاعِ الْإِسْتِعْدَادِ لِلْإِيقَاعِ بِهِمْ مَأْمُورًا بِالتَّبِيِّنِ لِمَنْ أَلْقَى إِلَيْهِ السَّلَامِ وكانت القرينة قوية في أنه إنما سلم تعوذا من القتل وخوفا على نفسه، فإن ذلك يدل على الأمر بالتبين والتثبت في كل الأحوال التي يقع فيها نوع اشتباه، فيتثبت فيها العبد حتى يتضح له الأمر ويبين الرشد والصواب. Amazing. The Sheikh said, if the one who goes out to fight in the cause of Allah and struggle against the enemies of Allah and prepares for them the utmost preparation, and he in order to get them and to defeat them, and he's been commanded to do so, to go and get the enemies of Allah, if he in that condition is commanded to investigate in regards to the one who simply gives him salam, even though there's a very strong indication that he's only gave the salam to protect himself from being killed, with that he's been commanded to investigate, this then indicates that it's compulsory that you investigate and you verify in all of the affairs in which there is some doubt. So you should verify it and investigate it until the matter becomes clear to you, and until you know guidance from misguidance, until you can distinguish or differentiate between guidance and misguidance. quite a lengthy discussion, but hey, I'm cold. I need to drink something warm. Ayat 95 and 96. Where is the ayah? Let me see. Get it here. No. لا يستوي القاعدون من المؤمنين غير أولي الضرر والمجاهدون في سبيل الله بأموالهم وأنفسهم، فضل الله المجاهدين بأموالهم وأنفسهم على القاعدين درجة، وكلا وعد الله الحسنى، وفضل الله المجاهدين على القاعدين أجرا عظيما، درجات منه ومغفرة ورحمة، وكان الله غفورا رحيما. Not equal are those believers remaining at home, other than the disabled, those who have an excuse. They're not equal with the mujahideen, who strive and fight in the cause of Allah with their wealth and their lives. Allah has preferred the mujahideen through their wealth and their lives over those who remain behind by degrees. And to both Allah has promised the best reward. But Allah has preferred the mujahideen over those who remain behind with a great reward. Degrees of high position from Him and forgiveness and mercy. And Allah is ever forgiving and merciful. The Shaykh said, أي لا يستوي من جاهد من المؤمنين بنفسه وماله ومن لم يخرج للجهاد ولم يقاتل أعداء الله. They are not equal, those among the believers who fight, who do jihad in all of its various forms, including the armed struggle, the fighting, the warfare. those who fight with themselves, obviously, and their wealth. They're not equal with those who did not go out for jihad, nor did they fight the enemies of Allah. فَفِيهِ الْحَثُ عَلَى الْخُرُوجِ لِلْجِهَادِ وَالتَّرْغِيبِ فِي ذَلِكَ والترهيب من التكاسل والقعود عنه من غير عذر. In this, there's this encouragement to go out in fighting in the cause of Allah. And then it is scaring you, finding the cause of Allah, and it's scaring you of, or threatening you of being lazy and remaining behind with no excuse. Now, of course, a comment must be made here. When we speak of jihad, what is jihad? Or where is jihad? We have to understand that this call here has to do with the context of the revelation. As in, then the jihad was being declared by who? By who? Allah and His Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Is there any doubt in your in the obligation of responding to that call? Absolutely not. Now today, do we have a leader in the sense of the Muslim Ummah? We don't. When we don't, we have to understand that jihad is not something that is done individually, haphazardly. It is an organized teaching in Islam, which has rules and regulations, guidelines and instructions, and usually it is done under the observation and under the authority of a leader. We're speaking about offensive jihad. Defensive jihad, case closed, Habibi. Someone barges into your country, you need to get up and handle business. End of story. Offensive, however, is another discussion. So we're speaking about that because many people today actually fall into terrorism, the un-Islamic one. They fall into terrorism and killing innocent in the name of jihad. Even though they don't have any rulers calling them to that, they don't have any amir, they don't have any instructions, they don't have any guidelines, and they don't even have fiqh of jihad. And so they create more problems to the Muslims than any solutions. And they come up with nothing. So differentiate between countries where Muslims are being attacked. Like now in Yemen, in Damaj, our brothers who are upon the way of the Salaf al-Salih, with some issues that exist among them over there, are being attacked by the Shia. And you know how many have been killed? Many have been killed, they've been in siege. They've been sieged for months now. Over a huge number of people, no access to medicine, no access to food, by the Shia. The Shia attacking Ahl Sunnah. The ulama there are saying to the people, this is jihad. Fighting the wicked Shia is jihad fi sabilillah. Because they're killing the Muslims, the Sunni Muslims. In Yemen, today, it's on CNN. If you know, besides the Arab newspapers, it's on CNN. That the Houthiyun are attacking the Sunni Muslims. So here they have ulama who are telling them, this is jihad. And the one who dies, inshallah, we assume, if his niyyah is sound, is a shaheed. So this, you see, there must be something. It is not you just get excited, because we can all get excited. I bet you anyone can see a YouTube video of some of the Israeli soldiers torturing some of the Palestinians by turning their arms around and breaking them with a rock. All these are on YouTube. Slapping old women. And you see this video and you're ready to go out and do anything fi sabilillah. But that's not Islam. That's emotionalism. Even if you feel this way, you're revengeful. You want to take revenge for this Muslim woman. This is your mother at the end of the day. And some wicked soldier slaps her on her face. You won't accept that. But you acting in this way is not going to get us any beneficial results. So you have to understand now, the context here, don't misunderstand it. And go out and do kill Muslims and say, wallah, this is jihad fi sabilillah, as many people do today. No, this has to do with the context. Or in today's time, the scholars are the ones who identify the area where jihad is legitimate versus the area where jihad is not legitimate, what is acceptable, what is not. So we have to go by higher authorities. Otherwise, as individuals, you may have a misjudgment. And Allah did not hold you accountable for being the mufti who tells what is valid and what is invalid. Your job is to follow the leaders in regards to what they tell you. If they make a mistake, they will deal with Allah on Yawm al-Qiyamah. You're fine. So be careful of being an extremist in this particular regard. وَأَمَّا أَهْلُ الضَّرَرْ كَالْمَرِيضِ وَالْأَعْمَى وَالْأَعْرَجِ وَالَّذِي لَا يَجِدُ مَا يَتَجَهَزُ بِهِ فَإِنَّهُمْ لَيْسُوا بِمَنْزِلَةِ الْقَاعِدِينَ مِنْ غَيْرِ عُذُرٍ. As for the people of excuses, like the sick, the ill, sick person. وَالْأَعْمَى. What is an أَعْمَى? Does it occur in the Quran? Where? Does the word a'ma occur in the Quran and where? نعم عبس وتولى أن جاءه الأعمى. Don't be afraid, man. أن جاءه الأعمى. Does it occur elsewhere? Yes. What surah? أحسنت. ومن أعرض عن ذكري فإن له معيشة ضنكا ونحشره يوم القيامة أعمى. قال ربي لما حشرتني أعمى وقد كنت بصيرا. قال كذلك أتتك آياتنا فنسيتها وكذلك اليوم تنسى إلى آخر الآيات. So it occurs elsewhere as well. Does it occur in other places? Nowadays it's easy to find out. Buy an Android phone and install a Quran application, and you can search a word and see how many times it occurs in the Quran and where. It has become very easy, by the way. It has become very... Now, this is if you don't have internet. If you have internet, then it's way easier to go to many different websites. One of them is called Islamic City. It's an excellent website. Islamic City. But there's no two C's. So it's Islamic City, really. That's what it is. Islamicity, if my memory serves me well. Now, you don't accept the translation on that website because it has that of Yusuf Ali, and you don't want to read the Quran translated by Yusuf Ali at all. And sadly, in a debate I was listening to just the other day between one of the Muslims who was misguided, but he's excellent in debating, and some kafir, Christian kafir, they were having a debate about the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus. A recent debate, not Ahmad did that stuff, rahimahullah. And sadly, the Christian uses the Yusuf Ali translation in favor of their deviant views about Jesus. Because Yusuf Ali himself did not believe that Jesus was risen to the heavens. And he makes a comment in his translation of the ayah. So let those, you know, pay attention to this and reconsider, you know, what they say. And so the person is saying, Yusuf Ali said in his tafsir, in his translation, blah, blah, blah. Ah, so it is used against us because he had some botany, belief, and he denied different things in the deen, and he had a strange belief system. At the end of the day, some of it, you know, it's a form of Shi'ism, but that's besides the point. Now they've modified the translation a lot, so it is not as bad. But the best one you should use is Sahih International. If you're not using the one by Muhsin Ali Khan Taqiyuddin Hilali, use one by Sahih International. It is the most accurate translation of Sahih International. That's what it's called. I believe it's called the Noble Quran or the Quran. The Quran. The Noble Quran. The point being, this website, Islamic City, is amazing. When you go to the main site, on the left here, it says phonetic search. Phonetic search. So you write, let's say you can remember an Arabic word, the word yuqatilun. So you write yuqatilun, yuqatilun, because this is how you think of yuqatilun. Search, it will pull out all of the ayat where words like this appear in the Quran. Did I lose you somewhere? Oh yeah, well, it'll give you the Arabic and the English. Then you have to open another website, the truecall.com. There they have all the translation, including Sahih International. What I'm saying is, when you look up the phonetic search, it's going to give you the ayah in Arabic and the Yusuf Ali translation. You want the ayah in Arabic. Well, you just want the reference. It's going to tell you ayah, surah 3, ayah 20. Then you go to another website and you get the Sahih International translation. Don't depend on the one by Islamic City because it is that of Yusuf Ali. You follow me? So from now on, I mean, of course, provided that you know, mashallah, so many ayat in Arabic, if you ever remember an ayah in Arabic, like right now, we said a'ma. The brothers, Allah khair, remembered this in Surah Taha. But maybe you did. Maybe he could have forgotten. So if you remember, yeah, I know a'ma. I've read it in the Quran, but I don't know where. You go to this website and you put a'ma. A-M-A. A'ma. Because that's the closest thing to it. Believe it or not, it will pull it out, man. It's amazingly accurate. Amazingly accurate. And so if you're involved in da'wah and you need to do some research, these websites you have to have on a special folder on your toolbar. Create a folder called Islamic Research, and you know, make them your favorite. Islamic City on your favorite, thetruecall.com on your favorite, abdurrahman.org on your favorite, because these are websites that you need to refer to often so you can present to the people the da'wah. Okay? So these were tips on da'wah, somewhat irrelevant, but always relevant to what we're doing. And it is nice if you didn't speak while I was speaking, barakallahu feekum. Na'am. فَإِنَّهُمْ أَيْفٌ. So the one who is ill, the one who is blind, and a'raj, what is the a'raj? A'raj. Well, if you had the Islamic City, you would look it up now, then you see the English word for it. The one who is disabled in one of his legs. I don't know if there's a special medical term, I'm not an expert. The one who uses, you know, because one leg is amputated or is broken. So what is one-legged? They call him one-legged? Where's the native speaker? You're the native speaker? One-legged, is that what they call him? Yeah, one-legged person. Nah. So al-a'raj is the one-legged person. Obviously, he can't really engage in jihad. He's excused. وَالَّذِي لَا يَجِدُ مَا يَتَجَهَزُ بِهِ. And the one who cannot find that which with which he can fight. He doesn't have the logistics. He doesn't have the horse or the camel. He doesn't have the weapons. He doesn't have the bow and arrow. He doesn't have a sword. He doesn't have the means, in other words. Let's use the word means, more comprehensive. He doesn't have the means to do so. فَإِنَّهُمْ لَيْسُ بِمَنْزِلَةِ الْقَاعِدِينَ مِنْ غَيْرِ عُذُرٍ. These are not like those who are remaining behind with no excuse. Yani, we have those who are fighting in the cause of Allah, and we have those who are not. Now, those who are not are either those who are lazy or those who are excused. Those who are excused are not like those who are lazy. Even though they're both in the category of not being with the fighters, but they're not equal because one has an excuse whereas the other one does not. And so Allah is telling us that they're not the same in His sight. فَمَنْ كَانَ مِنْ أُولِي الضَّرَرَ رَاضِيًا بِقُعُودِهِ. If one was among those who are excused, but he was satisfied with him remaining behind. Yeah, and even though he has an excuse, internally his niyyah is yes. You know, I don't want to go. And I have an excuse because I'm one-legged, or I'm blind, or whatever. لَا يَنْوِي الْخُرُوجَ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ. في سبيل الله لولا وجود المانع لا يحدث نفسه بذلك. He does not intend to go out in the cause of Allah had the reason not, excuse not been there, meaning if he didn't have an excuse, he doesn't have the niyyah to go في سبيل الله. ولا يحدث نفسه بذلك. He doesn't remind himself of the importance of doing so. فإنه بمنزلة القاعد لغير عذر. He is equal to the one who is remaining behind with no excuse. So what is the main difference here? Niyyah. Two people remain behind. One is blind and one is not. The one who's blind, Islamically is excused because he's blind. However, his niyyah is of such that even if I were not blind, I would still not go. So now he becomes equal to the one who is lazy to begin with. He doesn't have an excuse because his niyyah made him equal to him. Even though he had an excuse, that doesn't count now. Because if he didn't have that excuse, he would still not go out of laziness. Clear? I hope so. فَإِنَّهُ بِمَنْزِلَةِ مَنْ خَرَجَ. نعم. وَمَنْ كَانَ عَازِمًا عَلَى الْخُرُوجِ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ لَوْلَا وُجُودِ الْمَانِعِ وَيَتَمَنَّ ذَلِكَ وَيُحَدِّثْ بِهِ نَفْسَهُ. As for the one who had the determination to go out in the cause of Allah, had he not been prevented by that preventing reason, and he reminds himself of the importance of going في سبيل الله, فَإِنَّهُ بِمَنْزِلَةِ مَنْ خَرَجَ لِلْجِهَادِ. He is equivalent to one who has gone out for jihad, even if he didn't go. Because now his blindness is a valid excuse preventing him from going, but his niyyah will put him with the people on the battlefield. Capish? I hope so. لِأَنَّ النِّيَّةَ الْجَازِمَةَ إِذَا اقْتُرِنَا بِهَا مَقْدُورُهَا مِنَ الْقَوْلِ أَوِ الْفِعْلِ يُنَزَّلُ صَاحِبُهَا بِمَنْزِلَةِ الْفَاعِلِ. Excellent. The firm niyyah, if it is accompanied with whatever one is able to do, whether it is verbally or in action, it makes the person, the possessor of this niyyah, equivalent to the one who does it. Yeah, and if you intended to do something, if you intended to do something and you exhausted yourself and you exerted yourself in doing it, but you failed, as long as the niyyah was there and firm and you've utilized the means, then you will be given the reward of someone who did it even though you weren't able to do it. But simply intending without making an effort, no. There must be some effort associated, verbal or action, depending on your ability. Inshallah, that should suffice for now. And in our next week, bi-idhnillah azza wa jalla, if we all remain alive and healthy, we should we'll continue discussing the difference in degrees between the mujahideen, and more on that. And then we will be dealing of one of the most important ayat in the book of Allah in regards to migration. Take it easy, guys. In regards to Surah An-Nisa. Now, we'll be doing 95, 96, inshallah. And hopefully 97, 98, and 99. Because we're going to be discussing the issue of hijrah. Because many people don't know about the ruling of residing among the disbelievers or residing in the land of kufr. And so this ayat will shed some light on the ruling. And it's something that is important and which we should know. So, Jazakumullah khair.